from WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on this hump day, Wednesday, May 27th, 2015. We've got a great show in store for you all. We'll start at the top of the hour by, of course, talking about the big news concerning FIFA and its corruption that is found to have taken place for over two decades. Can you believe that? We'll chat about that. Also, the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James, they have reached the NBA Finals, ladies and gents. We'll chat about this accomplishment for LeBron as, of course, this in his first season back. Of course, after announcing that he would, take his talents from the Miami Heat and return home to Cleveland. What does this mean now for LeBron James's legacy? Also, we've got a fantastic Barbershop Wednesday centered on the game of basketball. Is the three-point line hurting the overall game? We'll discuss that. Also, we'll invite Brian Calloway, prep sports writer for the Lansing State Journal, to talk about the Greater Lansing Honor Roll meet that took place yesterday, as well as the Diamond Classic, and so much more. Do not touch that dial. Let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners again for this Wednesday, May 27th. All right, folks, the Greater Lansing Honor Roll Meet of Champions were held yesterday at Holt High School. A few of the notable wins. Here's a few. I'll just read a few off here. The 32-meter relay was won by Charlotte. The 110 hurdles was won by Noah Caudy of Lakewood. The 100-meter dash, Austin Edwards of Grand Ledge. The 800-meter relay was taken by Sexton. The 1600-meter run, Alberto Gomez of Holt. The 400-meter dash, Kyle Finnett of Okemos. We'll have a more in-depth synopsis, I should say, with Brian Calloway, the Lansing State Journal, who actually reported from the meet. You don't want to miss that at all, folks. And MSU is actually one of four schools that receive a visit from transferring Providence center Pascal Chukwu, according to a CBSSports.com report. Now, the John Rolfstein report, citing anonymous sources, said Kansas, Virginia, and Nebraska are the other candidates for the services of the, get this, 7'2", 226-pound Chukwu. Now, Chukwu, originally from Nigeria, averaged 2.6 points and 2.4 rebounds with 23 blocks last year as a freshman for the Friars. He will have to sit out next season under NCAA transfer rules and will have 3 years of eligibility left starting in 2016-17. But how about that? 7'2", 226 pounds? My goodness. All right, the Detroit Tigers, they snapped its three-game skid yesterday with a 1-0 victory over the Oakland A's. David Price pitched 7 shutout innings. He allowed 5 hits and a walk while striking out 3, moving his record to 4-1 in an ERA to 2.97. Now, A's starter Jesse Chavez held his own in a hard luck loss, giving up the unearned run, five hits and 2 walks while striking out 4 over 8 innings. And good news for Justin Verlander. Justin Verlander actually threw 70 pitches over 4 1/3 innings in a simulated game yesterday. He faced Brian Holliday, Tyler Collins, Hernan Perez, and rookie Dixon Machado, and his pitching line looked like this. 2 hits, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts. Pretty impressive, right? Manager Brad Ausmus hit the finish on his fastball, and the break on his breaking pitches is what stood out. All right, in NBA playoff action last night, the Cleveland Cavaliers, they topped the Atlanta Hawks to complete the sweep in the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals. 118-88, the final of that game. LeBron James had 23 points. Kyrie Irving provided a boost after missing 2 games. And Cleveland has now reserved a spot in the NBA Finals. Again, the Golden State Warriors have an opportunity to book their ticket to the NBA Finals if they beat the Houston Rockets tonight. All right, Henrik Lundqvist had lots of help in another season-saving performance for the New York Rangers. The star goalie stopped 36 shots, and Derek Brassard had a hat trick for the President's Trophy winners, who forced Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals with a 7-3 victory over the Tampa Bay Lightning on Tuesday night. Interesting story here concerning two of the NBA's greatest players. The rivalry between Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant is one of the greatest stories of the NBA, really. Now, the two teammates couldn't stand one another despite teaming up to win three NBA championships with the Los Angeles Lakers around the turn of the century. But how deep does that hatred grow? Now, pretty deep, according to John Black, who is the vice president of public affairs, public relations for the Lakers during the 2003-2004 season. Now, on a story of that 03-04 Lakers team from the Bleacher Report, titled An Oral History of the 03-04 Los Angeles Lakers, the First Super Team, Black told a scary story about an exchange between Shaq and Kobe in which Shaq actually threatened to kill Kobe. Wow, and last but not least, federal prosecutors allege that two generations of soccer officials used partnerships with sports marketing executives to solicit $150 million in bribes and kickbacks in exchange for, among other things, their support for the sites of FIFA World Cup events, from qualifiers to the 2010 World Cup, and so much more. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in at 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. Without further ado, I believe it's about that time to start the show.
Luxury hotel in Zurich where members of FIFA's board were gathering for the election this Friday, which is basically going to crown Sepp Blatter, the longtime leader of FIFA, with another term. And instead, Swiss police, working with the FBI and the IRS, came in and arrested up to seven people are now arrested, top members of FIFA's board. And they include Jeffrey Webb, who's the FIFA vice president. Former vice president of FIFA, Jack Warner, is also among those who's now charged. 14 people in all are going to be charged today in Brooklyn, Chris. And this is an investigation that, you know, according to the Justice Department, spans a couple of decades. And according to them, FIFA was being run as a criminal enterprise.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports on this Wednesday, May 27th, 2015. Hopefully you all are having a great one out there. And as you just heard during that montage, again, that was actually CNN's Evan Perez reporting on the breaking news that occurred last night, just after, actually, the Cleveland Cavaliers booked their ticket to head to the NBA Finals with that win, completing the sweep of the Atlanta Hawks. I happen to be up, getting ready for bed, about to doze off, and then all of a sudden look at my phone, and boom. Notification that FIFA is in some hot water, to say the least, folks. And again, I want to get your thoughts on this story because it is one of much intrigue. Again, you know, just to put into context just how big this story is. I mean, folks, we know that soccer is the most popular sport globally. You know, it's kind of ironic because yesterday on the show, we actually brought to you guys a feature done by WKAR's current state's own Kevin Lavery concerning the sport of cricket, which is second in popularity and growing popularity in the entire world. But, you know, everyone, you know, it notes that soccer is top dog, is the top sport when you talk about global attraction. Maybe not so much here in the United States, even though I do believe it is growing. The numbers definitely prove that. Soccer runs the world, folks. And, you know, there's always been, you know, a sort of an interesting aura surrounded by soccer that is no secret to anyone out there. And, you know, the sport has been tainted to a degree when looking at its storied history when it comes to those big wigs in the upper echelons of the sport who are involved with pulling the strings when it comes to who wins, who loses, where the World Cup is going to take place, so on and so forth. And many, I mean, if you really want to dive into the history of the sport of soccer, it's been duly noted that even players in the past, if they didn't perform to a certain extent, that respective country would even hand down punishments for certain athletes. Just an interesting history, to be honest with you all. But, I mean, looking at the World Cup, I mean, we saw the World Cup not too long ago, and the phenomenon that it has, the global impact that it has, is truly jaw-dropping. So for me, you know, when seeing about, you know, hearing about this story and this FBI investigation that now spans, of course, folks looking at it, I mean, more than two decades, first off, the first thing is it's saddening, without a doubt, just sad to see anything of this sort happen. But, you know, I'm reminded of a quote. You know, I'm big into, you know, comedy. I love watching different comedy acts, you know, here and there. I mean, I probably have to say my favorite comedian out there is probably Kevin Hart. But another one of my favorite comedians who I have to put in my top five list is Aziz Ansari. He's just a hilarious guy, folks. He's on multiple movies, multiple TV shows. Just a funny guy. But I recently saw one of his stand-ups. And, you know, there was a saying that he had that really stood out to me. And, you know, he talked about the love we have for certain things, whether it be a certain television show or whether, well, I wouldn't say television show, mostly food or a certain sport, something of that nature. And he really attacked it from the food angle, you know, because, you know, I grew up a big chicken nugget guy. I love chicken nuggets. But Aziz said something that really stood out to me. He said, if you know what it took, the behind the scenes things that were going on to deliver that chicken nugget in your hand and into your mouth, you probably would never eat chicken nuggets ever again, folks. And that's something that's a saying that you can kind of equate when talking about what is going down with FIFA and the game of soccer, because certainly it's a coveted brand. I mean, many people out there love the sport of soccer. And again, it's why it has such a global impact. It's marketed very well when you look at its presence. And, you know, when looking at it, though, a lot of people just look at the brand and say, wow, I love this sport. But again, if you knew what was going on behind the scenes, I mean, it would make you sick to your stomach. And now you're starting to see those type of things come to light now. And this report is pretty extensive. You know, getting ready for work today, they actually streamed the press conference from the FBI, you know, and those who are involved with this investigation. They held a press conference that was streamed on CNN. ESPN actually picked up the broadcast, so I watched it on ESPN, and they basically had a big chart laid out as to where the money and where the corruption lied, the individuals involved with the corruption, and what exactly was taking place. Now, it's pretty intricate, so it was hard to follow, you know, the more gritty and specific details. But you pretty much got the gist, of what they were saying when they took that podium. And at the end of the day, I mean, it has to just leave a sour taste in your mouth, specifically for those who are soccer fans. And what about the kids? The kids growing up who enjoy this what they call the beautiful game. The beautiful game, folks. But unfortunately, the beautiful game is run, by ugly people. And I really hope, you know, something big. We all know something big is going to happen with the punishment of these, 14 individuals. But the question I have is, where does the leadership now go? What direction does this now go, and how do you regulate it, to be frank with you? I want to invite now the engineer for WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance, who happens to be one of those big soccer fanatics. Isaac, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing well. Although this timing came as a shock, and really we didn't know about this investigation going on whatsoever, the actual findings themselves are not that shocking. We've heard these rumors about FIFA forever. Sepp Blatter, the president of FIFA, is widely regarded as sport's most powerful man, but also most corrupt man. And FIFA, you can just look back on the decisions they make of where to award World Cups. They're all controversial. The most recent selection of Qatar, has so many workers' rights violations. Thousands of people have died making the stadiums, yet FIFA has chosen to keep the World Cup in Qatar. Similarly, they assigned one to Russia, not to get into politics, but Vladimir Putin is not always the most popular and agreeable figure. Mm-hmm. So FIFA, they're known to kind of mix it up a little bit with some controversial calls. And those calls, now we know for sure, have big monetary reasons behind them.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And I'm glad you actually brought up that point when talking about the World Cup, because, again, I remember watching a report done by HBO's HBO Sports, and they actually went into depth as to how, you know, when a new location for the World Cup is announced, again, they you know, everyone's in competition with each other. Everyone's trying to drive in the most, you know, revenue for an event of that magnitude where the entire world is watching you. And, you know, many of these locations build specific venues just for the World Cup. And what goes into it is, I mean, you have these individuals who work around the area, that a certain area like Qatar, a certain area may be rich, and there may be a lot of individuals out there who are lavish with a lot of money. But to be honest, I mean, the outskirts of that area are littered with a lot of people in poverty. So what they do is, those individuals who are going through tough financial situations, they say, hey, all right, we'll hire you. We'll bring you in to build the next World Cup venue, but we're not going to pay you extreme amounts here. But those individuals don't care about that, as long as they're getting paid some sort of money, because at the end of the day, they have families, they have mouths to feed, and the conditions of the work environment that they live in. I mean, you're talking about these little shacks, everyone's huddled in with one another. I mean, it's just unsanitary, to say the least. You're down there in like, you know, 100-degree weather where the humidity is through the roof. And many people have actually died, like as you just said, Isaac, putting together these venues. So that is just a small window into the corruption and the mismanagement of the world of FIFA and soccer in general that has a lot of people just scratching their heads and saying something has to be done. I, for one, am very, very happy that this investigation has come out and that this is really getting shown a lot of light now to many people here in America, more specifically, that may not have known that this was going on, to be frank with you. And, you know, it's interesting because if you really look at this report, one guy who happened to be like, you know, the informant for this whole investigation happened to be Chuck Blazer. You know who Chuck Blazer is, Isaac? That name probably rings a bell, right? Because he was actually one of the higher echelons in FIFA back in the day, am I right?
Oh, yeah.
I think it was he like one of the vice presidents of FIFA back in the day, I think?
I believe so.
Yeah, and Chuck Blazer actually was one of the informants that worked with the FBI, who even during certain meetings had a wire tapped on his body to record different conversations with certain individuals on the board of FIFA to put a lot of this to light. So he was really the insider, if you will. But again, there's so many question marks concerning this. And another aspect to this, and you talk about the World Cup, Isaac. Another thing that the FBI hasn't found to have, you know, have believed any tampering was involved with, and it happened to be the most recent selection when it comes to the World Cup. Of course, the U.S. lost their most recent bid for the World Cup. I believe, what is it, in 2022, I believe. And there's a lot of speculation as to, you know, did the U.S., you know, get the short end of the stick here? Were the votes skewed in any way? Right now, the FBI hasn't found any information that supports that accusation, but they're still digging into it. But again, when looking at the what they do have, I mean, it's really jaw-dropping, at least for me, who is a guy who doesn't follow soccer that intently. I really only watch it when the World Cup does come around. I can only name you the big names like Lionel Messi, for goodness sake. But when you look at this, again, we're talking about $150 million in bribes and kickbacks in exchange for, among other things, individual support for sites of FIFA World Cup events, from qualifiers to the 2010 World Cup. And then if you look at this, a 47-count federal indictment was unsealed in Brooklyn, charging these 14 defendants, 9 who are FIFA officials and 5 corporate executives, with racketeering, wire fraud, money laundering, and bribery, among other offenses in connection with a near quarter century scheme to enrich themselves through their management of the sport. So this was a selfish thing for them, not only to bring attention to their respective, you know, sites for a World Cup event, but at the end of the day, to make them rich and profitable men. That's what this was all about. And just looking more in depth into the report, it goes into detail about how certain respective companies, you know, when they knew this was going on, certain individuals, certain employees of those respective companies would assist in the whole money laundering scheme and making sure that the quote unquote dirty money became clean by putting them through the financial system right here in the United States of America. Always say, you know, eventually, if you're doing corrupt things of this nature or doing things you aren't supposed to be doing, you better believe that those things eventually are going to come to light. And it's just so, you know, it's jaw-dropping because the FBI has been looking at this for now over 20 years. We're talking about two decades here, Isaac. And now it's hitting the fan. It's unbelievable stuff, man. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear about the longevity of this case as well, because these rumors have been swirling around for a while, and it was a little bit disconcerting to think that nobody's really paying attention to this. Nobody's coming down and saying this is the world's most popular game with billions, if not trillions of dollars of financial impact on economies across the world every year. And nobody looks into how much money is being wasted by the bribes or, at that time, alleged bribes of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I look at it, first off, this is just a great relief for soccer fans and football fans, as it's known in other countries, of course, across the world.
Yeah.
Because the other thing is I've done some research on FIFA myself, and not only do they take bribes and run a very, like you and I were saying before the show, mafia-like scandal.
Right.
But they are just, it's an immoral group. They don't support as much charity as they should. And I'd like to bring an example from the Brazilian World Cup,
mm-hmm.
where Budweiser is an official sponsor of FIFA, or the World Cup at least. And Brazil had recently started new laws outlawing the sale of alcohol in stadium venues. But FIFA threatened to pull the World Cup from Brazil if Budweiser was not allowed to be sold in stadiums. And Brazil, of course, had made this illegal because of fandemonium problems of
fans getting out of control, basically.
Yeah, just getting drunk and carried away and
right.
drunk driving, everything like that. So very great reasons for Brazil banning it. But FIFA enforced the Budweiser or threatened to pull the World Cup. And it shows, I mean, Budweiser was served at the games. It shows just how powerful FIFA is as an organization. It's more powerful than many countries, including several countries that host the World Cup.
Right, exactly. And you know what? ESPN E60 actually did a pretty interesting documentary centered on the upper echelons in the world of soccer. It was done by ESPN's Jeremy Schapp, who I'm a big fan of. He does unbelievable investigative reporting work for ESPN. But, you know, I had just finished watching, the story that E60 had done on Ernie Johnson of TNT, and that came on. I really wasn't interested in it. I decided, all right, I'll turn it off and go to bed. But now I definitely have to watch that documentary, which will actually be rebroadcast on ESPN later tonight. I don't know at what time, but I will be glued to my TV to watch that report and to see exactly who these faces are that go along with these names that we see throughout this document. But you just said it, Isaac. I mean, FIFA is such a world powerhouse, and that really speaks volumes to the power that they have. Now, the next question that I have for you out there, those listening to us right now, is that because there's another angle to this that many are talking about, and as a parent, you know, I'm not a parent, but as a parent, for the parents out there, if your little one is a big soccer fanatic and plays the game of soccer, or you grew up in that culture, if you're looking at FIFA, and if your child is looking at what is going down with this investigation, what do you tell them? That's the big thing for me, because I don't know what I would tell my son or daughter. If they were just big fans, let's say this happened, you know, right here in America to the NFL. There was a big scandal of this nature in the NFL or the NBA or the NHL. I mean, what do you tell your son or daughter concerning those who don't play the sport, but those hierarchies that manage and run the logistics, the economics of those respective sports. Because overall, this makes FIFA and makes the game of soccer look really, really bad. And the money that these individuals were profiting from, I mean, this is money that Isaac, at the end of the day, was supposed to go back into the sport to support youth organizations, to support youth leagues, and even developing countries who could benefit financially much so through having a World Cup in their backyard. So it's just unfortunate to have corrupt people of this nature. I really don't know. I don't know what I would tell my son or daughter, but it would be a long talk that would probably last a few weeks. I tell you that. Isaac, how bad do you think this will hurt the overall perception of soccer and the youth who aspire to play it?
I think it will not have the same impact as potential safety problems in games, just because that's something that really makes parents say, you know, I don't want to play this type of game. But for fans of the sport first and players second, it is something to look at and say, like, you know, what? Why am I supporting an organization like this? Because at the end of the day, FIFA is the overseeing body of every single soccer league that we play.
Right.
If FIFA hands down a suspension, leagues can choose to accept or decline it. They always choose to accept it.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
FIFA is so powerful. And if you're a fan first, it is something that makes you lose a lot of respect for the game. Just like how the NFL alienated many fans with its domestic violence cases, this is even at maybe beyond that level, not because of the atrocities of bribery, but because of how long this has taken the place.
Mm-hmm.
So it really taints the history of the sport for many years instead of, you know, specific instance. This is something that's gone on for at least two generations of soccer officials, likely longer.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point, Isaac. Again, our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break, Isaac. When we come back, we'll, of course, talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers booking their ticket to the NBA Finals. This is actually LeBron James, who is regarded as the best player in the game today. His fifth straight appearance at this stage. We'll debate in Barbershop Wednesday the legacy, what this means to the legacy of LeBron James, and whether or not the three-point line is hurting the game of basketball. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, folks, our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Again, I'm very curious to get your guys' thoughts on, of course, the FIFA story that broke late last night concerning the corruption within the FIFA soccer organization that has been going on now for over two decades. What are your thoughts on it? What sort of ripple effect will this have concerning the popularity of the sport and the youth who play it? Call in right now, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, of course, have to talk about the second biggest story in the world of sports last night, and that concerning, of course, LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. How about LeBron James? I tell you what, is he not the best or what, folks? LeBron James and the Cavs, they topped the Atlanta Hawks to complete the sweep in the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals. 118-88 was the final of that game. LeBron had 23 points. Kyrie Irving, a player who has been battered with injuries throughout much of this year and even in this series, of course, he provided a bit of a boost after missing two games, and Cleveland again booked its ticket to the NBA Finals. Now we're waiting, and what many people believe just to be the inevitable now, that meeting between the Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors, the Golden State Warriors with an opportunity to finish things with the Houston Rockets if they do win in the Western Conference Finals tonight. So, Isaac, I want to chat about, you know, LeBron James. I mean, first off, how impressive really is this year's run for LeBron? Because first off, I have to say that I have to tip my cap to LeBron James, who is a player who, especially during that moment where, you know, he held the whole ESPN sit down. I forget which reporter it was with, but he had the whole sit down where he was sitting down there and the Boys and Girls Club is behind him. And of course, it was entitled The Decision. And it was basically this hour long special to see where exactly LeBron James would take his quote unquote talents. He decided to, of course, go to the Miami Heat, abandon his hometown in Ohio. And many people felt salty about it. We all know the images of Cleveland Cavaliers fans throughout the state of Ohio burning LeBron James's jersey. And I was one of those individuals who certainly criticized LeBron James for making that move to the Miami Heat. Why do you got to team up with, you know, Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh to win a championship? Why don't you do it the old-fashioned way? I think this run to the NBA Finals this year for LeBron James with this group of players, you know, who's the big three on this team? What do you got? What J.R. Smith, LeBron James, and what Dellavedova or Iman Shumpert? I mean, come on, man. It's so impressive because ideally LeBron James is playing with a lot of role players and making these players better by the minute when they're out there on the hardwood. Now, again, there's the other side of this to say that when looking at the Cleveland Cavaliers' run to the NBA Finals, it was really diluted. I mean, really the only competition they had was with the Chicago Bulls. Other than that, the East, we all know, has been garbage the last 2 to 3 seasons. So, hey, the Cleveland Cavaliers, their road, their path, if you put them in the Western Conference, maybe they don't make it all the way to the NBA Finals. So, at the end of the day, I think you do have to take this with a grain of salt. But again, 5 straight NBA Finals appearances for LeBron James, hey, that's still pretty impressive, Isaac.
Yeah, it is. And I'd like to talk about the company he joins with those 5 straight finals appearances. So, joins Bill Russell, Sam Jones, Casey Jones, Sanders, Cousy, Sharman, Heinsohn, and Ramsey, all from the Russell Celtics teams.
Wow.
That's a player that won, Bill Russell, I mean, is a player that won 11 championships in 13 years. And LeBron just joined the company of him. Like, for this feat. That is incredible. So, although I think you have to take it with a grain of salt, I also thought, I'm not sure about you, but I thought for the last 2 finals that LeBron qualified, excluding this one, I thought he did most of the work.
He was the man.
Of course, yeah. There was the first finals where everybody was like, where'd he go against Dallas? He's the vanishing man, you know?
Right, right.
And then next, played the Thunder, won. But there was still that Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and everybody really contributed to it. But then the next finals against the Spurs, I thought was all James. And then the next one, I thought the Vanishing Man applied more to Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. And that might be more because of vanishing knees.
Yeah, age, without a doubt.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think when looking at LeBron James, and this is the conversation that constantly pops up. In my personal opinion, again, folks, this is my opinion. I think Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time, bar none. I hate the comparisons left and right. But now I do think that when looking at LeBron James, you can put him in that same conversation as you could have a Kobe Bryant when Kobe really became, you know, in his own and matured as a player and started to evolve his basketball game. But at the end of the day, you know, the big question is, because people love to compare, that's what we do here in talk radio, love to compare, love to debate and have these type of conversations. What must LeBron James do in order to surpass Michael? That's the big question everybody's debating. I turned on ESPN, that was the big conversation. I'm driving here, I'm listening to that on the radio left and right. Honestly, I think, and you brought it up, Isaac, you kind of took it right out of my mouth, LeBron James's disappearing act against the Dallas Mavericks at the creme de la creme of NBA basketball competition, that was so bad to me that I don't think there's any way, there's anything LeBron James can do in order to surpass Michael. Because when you look at Michael's resume, it's flawless. I mean, you know, he's never lost. He's never lost an NBA Finals series. He never even went to a Game 7 in the NBA playoffs. You know, he's won MVPs. He's had scoring titles. There was a season where he averaged 38, 8, and 8. A lot of people forget about that. He's been the NBA's Defensive Player of the Year. I just think that when you look at Michael Jordan's resume, and not to mention the overall cultural impact globally that Michael Jeffrey Jordan had on the game is so insurmountable. We have to stop comparing players to that mountaintop because it's unfair, to be honest. And I think that LeBron and anybody in the NBA right now, that's not realistic for those players. I'm just saying. That's just my humble opinion.
I agree 100%. And I'd throw in Bill Russell into that category too, because I think there's a debate to be made for Russell as the greatest player of all time if you just go off of championships.
And accolades, right.
I mean, it totally is based on what you count as your criteria for judging the greatest player ever, but nobody's going to touch 11 championships. And I know there were fewer teams. I know the competition might not have been as great, but 11 championships in 13 years is astounding. I can't do anything close to that, no matter what video game I'm playing or movie I'm watching. That's amazing. So I think you can make a debate for Russell. My list also is topped by the, of course, just undefeatable Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. He averaged 20 points per game as like a 40-year-old on the Wizards.
I know. A lot of people forget that, right? I mean, when Michael was with the Wizards, he was voted an all-star, for goodness sake. I mean, that's no surprise because he's Michael Jordan from the fan perspective. But even if you just look at his numbers, he deserved to be in that company as well. I mean, it's unbelievable how efficient Michael Jordan was at that age. I don't think there's not many players on the planet that can do that.
No, and I think LeBron is approaching that point. But I think, LeBron still is an iffy 3 or 4 all-time right with Magic. I'd like to see LeBron get one more ring, mm-hmm. and maybe one more finals appearance for me to for sure put him above Magic, throw him into that solid 3 spot. But it's going to take some work for him to oust Bill Russell or MJ. And I don't think he's got the time for that, to be honest. He's 31 now, 30.
Right, 31, I believe, yeah.
And I just don't see it.
And the thing about it is, I mean, when you look at, you know, LeBron James' overall game. Again, he's more so comparable to Magic Johnson than any other player to me, in my opinion. And I gotta ask you this, Isaac: if you could build your all NBA first team in NBA history, your starting five, your starting lineup, are you taking LeBron over Magic?
I'm taking LeBron and Magic. I'm going. But if I had,
if you had
to choose
one of them, right?
Okay, if I
and he's
had
30
to
years
choose,
old, LeBron is 30 years old.
Yes, I'm going LeBron because I think his jump shot has evolved to the point which makes him so much more dangerous than Magic. Magic was a better floor runner, which is crazy to think because LeBron's a pretty dang good floor runner. But yeah. Magic, just, you know, you see the highlights of those run and gun Lakers. They're the only NBA team since the shot clock era to win a championship with the run and gun.
Right.
So
right.
That's amazing. But I'm taking LeBron just because I think in the half court, that jump shot was so dangerous. I think with these big defensive centers right now, I'm not sure if Magic could have thread the same passes through. I still think he'd be the greatest point guard in the league today and of all time if he played in today's era. Mm. But no, I'm going with LeBron if I've got a pick.
I would go with Magic. I would go with Magic. And then those are all great points you make, Isaac. But I just think from a leadership standpoint, I just think Magic Johnson was one of the greatest leaders in sports ever. And, you know, watching what he was able to do as a leader as well as what he was able to do. I mean, his freakish talent on the court, being able to play, which LeBron can do as well, any position on the court, 1 through 5. Oh, I mean, I just think Magic was just unbelievable, man. I have to go with Magic.
Yeah, well, and Magic, you bring up that, and that's a great point because we saw what Magic did as a rookie.
Right,
exactly. The confidence he exuded as a rookie on that Lakers team.
Yeah, yep.
He led Michigan State, of course, to a championship.
Right.
Then he led the LA Lakers to a championship his rookie his first year, sophomore year.
And first year, yeah. Unbelievable.
He did it with a hook shot, with a sky hook when Kareem was injured. Yep. Like you said, all five positions. LeBron can play all five positions too, but LeBron took a little bit longer than people expected to develop that clutch gene.
Right.
Magic was born with that.
Exactly. I agree. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, I'll be chatting with Brian Callaway, prep sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. Brian will talk about the Greater Lansing Honor Roll Meet that took place at Holt High School yesterday evening. And we'll also chat a bit about the Diamond Classic Baseball Tourney. All of that and so much more. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Got to remind you all that, hey, unfortunately, there is no Current Sports TV taping today. Of course, I got a few emails because we usually tape Current Sports TV each and every Wednesday. And we've changed the time for the spring and summer months, folks. I mean, we'll change it back around the end of August. But, of course, we usually tape it around 6 p.m., but we moved that time up to 3 p.m. for the spring and the summer. But there is no Current Sports TV this week. It is preempted, as well as next week. So the next time we are on the air and the next time you can join me in the friendly confines of the WKAR Current Sports TV studios will be, mark your calendars, that's right, on June 10th, as I sit down with Mike Ingram, who is the head men's basketball coach of the Lansing Community College. So again, you can sign up to be a part of that live studio audience by simply going to WKAR.org. All right, well, let's invite our guest for today's Current Sports. He is certainly a voice that you've heard multiple times here on the show. My man, Brian Callaway, who is the prep sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. Brian, how you doing?
I'm not bad, Al. How are you?
Oh, I am fantastic, man. I'm enjoying this weather. Finally, it's starting to break, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Gotta love that. Now I want to, first off, Brian, before we get to the honor roll meet that took place yesterday, of course, you braved the storm. Probably were out there with an umbrella or either soaking wet. We'll get to that honor roll meet in just a sec. But I want to start off by talking about the Diamond Classic, an event over the years that has really become one of my favorite high school sporting events, dating all the way back to when I was an intern at Michigan State University. Now, the Diamond Classic, the teams that are left are Grand Ledge, Mason, St. John's, and Fowlerville. Now, we all know about the dominance that Grand Ledge has had, recently and going back traditionally when looking at the track record of the Diamond Classic. What are the chances that Grand Ledge can make it 6 out of the last 7? Are they the clear favorite here again this year?
I'm not necessarily sure they're the clear favorite. I mean, this was a year when the Diamond Classic committee, when they were selecting the field, I mean, they kind of saw a lot of evenly matched teams when they were selecting it, and there wasn't really a team that really stuck out to the committee when they were, you know, picking the field for this the annual Diamond Classic. So, I mean, you have to say that maybe they're the favorite based on, you know, accomplishments in the past, but I don't necessarily think that they are, you know, necessarily the ultimate favorite. I mean, I think there's a lot of teams, any one of these four teams that are left here in the semifinals, I think, has a chance to win it. I mean, when you kind of look at a team like St. John's, which had one of the best resumes of all the teams that were in the Diamond Classic when at the time that this was selected. I mean, I think they had 7 wins against the other 8 teams in the field, but when this was selected. So, I mean, I look at a team like that as a team that has a strong chance of doing something, you know, here and has a good chance to win. And then you look at kind of a team like Fowlerville, who's had a very good season as well, too, and has picked up some very, very good quality wins along the way as well, too. So, I mean, those are just two teams right there, too, that I think just have just as good of a chance as Grand Ledge. And when you look at Mason, that's the other team that's in the left. I mean, they, after they got selected to the Diamond Classic, they lost five straight before winning their opening Diamond Classic game. So, I mean, that's another team that, you know, you don't know. They might be able to do something there next week as well, too. But we also look at this. It kind of depends on, you know, what team's still alive in the state tournament and what team will be able to maybe put all their energy into the Diamond Classic.
Yeah, certainly. Now, Brian, we're talking about the selection process of the teams that compete in the Diamond Classic. Now, am I right or am I totally wrong here? Were you a part of the selection committee with this?
No, I was not a part of the committee.
Okay, that birdie was totally wrong then, who told me that.
No, I was not.
Right, I'm sorry, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I wasn't on it. I just gave information, records, and, you know, things like that to the committee. So.
Right. Now, when talking about the selection process of these teams, what sort of goes in to that process? What do you really look at? What did the committee look at, I should say, when selecting the certain teams to compete in the Classic? Because, again, there's a lot of people that are still talking about Eden Rapids, a team who was ranked number one in the Division II state rankings the week prior to the release of the Classic field, and the reason as to why they were left out. I mean, what is that? What do those discussions entail? And what gives a team more weight than another when making this field?
I think a lot of it has to do maybe with the way a team is playing as the selection process gets near, and also just the quality of schedule, I believe, is, you know, one of those things that has something to do with it. Obviously, Eden Rapids, you know, like you said, they were number one at that time and you know, felt like that they deserved a spot to be in there. And I think one of the things that hurt Eden Rapids with the selection process was at the time they were 3-3 or 4-4 in the white at the time of the selection. So there was three other teams that were ahead of them in their own league. So, I mean, they were number one in the state, but the only thing that was maybe holding them back a little bit was their league record, where, you know, Fowlerville was ahead of them in that league, Heartland was ahead of them in the league, and Lansing Catholic was also ahead of them in their league as well, too. So I think that was one of the things that probably hurt Eden Rapids a little bit, you know, when the selection process was being made, and just the fact that maybe they had stumbled in a few of their recent games prior to the selection process.
So was it the right move? Do you think it was the right move?
It's really hard to say. I mean, you hate to see a team, especially like that was ranked number one in the state, being left out of the field completely. And, you know, and then especially, you know, you might think they have a case too, especially when you see a team, Portland St. Patrick. You know, the committee always does let in a small school team in the field. And, you know, Portland St. Patrick only went three innings against Hazlitt in the opening round. So it's like, you know, should the small team be included, you know, to risk maybe a team like Eden Rapids being left out? I mean, that's, you know, one of the things that maybe would have to be thought about in the future.
Yeah, certainly. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are talking with Brian Calloway of the Lansing State Journal. Now, Brian, if looking at this entire tourney, if there is one thing that you would change about it, whether it be location or you know, the process, again, as you just alluded to, of selecting the teams or anything that you would like to change, what would it be? Or do you think it's perfect? It should be left alone?
I mean, I think it's a good tournament. I mean, I think maybe the location, if you can find an alternate place for some of the quarterfinal games. Obviously, I think you were out there on last Wednesday when I was out there, when the kid from Mason obviously took the ball at Kircher Municipal, took a bad hop, and he got struck in the face. The field at Kircher Municipal is kind of, you know, come under a little bit of heat just because it hasn't been kept well, and you could see that, especially on Wednesday night, with just a way that some of the balls played off of the surface there, where it took some tricky hops, or like the hop that caught the Mason third baseman right between the lip and the nose there. So, I mean, maybe if you could, if Kircher Municipal is not up to standards, maybe you move it somewhere else, if you could find something that's available and it's for a reasonable price. I mean, that might be the thing. And, you know, maybe expanding the field a little bit, or taking the best 10 teams and maybe not necessarily worrying about getting a small school, maybe are things that possibly could be thought about being changed.
Yeah, I think those are very good assumptions. And yeah, that was pretty bad. You know, the kid taking it right to the face. That was really, really bad. But and Brian, looking at you know, this time of the year with the Diamond Classic going on, as well as you have postseason tournaments for respective baseball and softball teams going on as well, is it difficult for the teams involved with the Diamond Classic to balance competing in the Classic as well as trying to get far in their respective conference and divisional tournaments?
I mean, I think that is an issue that comes into play. I mean, for example, with Portland St. Patrick, who we were just talking about with the Diamond Classic, I mean, they held back their best pitching because they were more concerned with winning a league title. And, you know, that severely hurt them when they were facing Haslett. I mean, against a team, when a small school is going against a bigger school team like Haslett, I mean, you kind of have to put your best out there if you want to have a chance to win. And, you know, they had a big league doubleheader that was going to decide the championship, and they decided to hold back their top pitchers in order to, you know, chase their goal of winning a league championship over the Diamond Classic. And that's
right.
just something that, right. that they chose, you know. And you know, Haslett's coach, Coach Woodworth, spoke about that after that game and talked about maybe how his team being in a similar predicament last year when, you know, they had to make a decision of whether they were going to put all their resources into winning the Diamond Classic or maybe hold someone back for a league championship game. So just depending on how the calendar falls and what kind of situation you can be in, I mean, it can get very tricky. And, you know, especially for these teams that are still alive as well, too, and they'll have games on Monday and possibly could have a game on Tuesday if they were to reach the championship. I mean, you have some things to think about when on Saturday if you're going for a district title. And obviously, you know, the state tournament is, you know, the biggest precedent, you know, and trying to put all your resources into that. But, you know, teams around this area take a lot of pride in doing well in the Diamond Classic, and that's something that they also take pride in as well, too. So,
yeah, so is that fair to the tournament? Again, you just talked about, you know, certain teams being in certain predicaments where they want to rest certain players and chase a conference title as opposed to, you know, a Diamond Classic title. Is that fair to the Diamond Classic? And if you knew a coach was going to do that, would you even put that team in the field knowing that?
I mean, I think that's just very hard to tell. And I mean, is it fair to the Diamond Classic? I mean, I just think it just has to be done that way because, I mean, the Diamond Classic is what it is just because, I mean, you take the best teams. And unfortunately in Michigan, the spring sports season is so short that it pretty much has to be done the way that it's done with the Diamond Classic being timed when it is. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I know
right.
the softball classic, for instance, is a little different, but they start a little bit earlier. And, you know, they finished last week, just a week before the state tournament. So there's not that, you know, coming into play. But, I mean, I just think, you know, obviously, I mean, the spring sports season goes so fast. And especially with the weather in Michigan, too, which, you know, kind of impacts things as well, too. It's just kind of, I think it's kind of hard to do it any other way. And especially if you're trying to get the 10 best teams and, you know, seeing the teams enough to try to get all those teams together in a field. I mean, I think it just has to be done the way that it's done right now.
Yeah, certainly. All right, Brian, before we get you out of here, we only got about 5 minutes left, but I want to talk about the Greater Lansing Area Honor Roll meet that took place yesterday at Holt High School. Just really a quick synopsis of what took place yesterday. Who do you think had the most impressive outings in your estimation, and how crazy was it watching the elements come into play as, of course, there was a big downpour throughout that meet?
Yeah, the elements were crazy. I mean, I don't even remember when I ran track back in my days in high school. I don't even remember ever seeing conditions like that for a track meet where, you know, just before the running events started, where it was, you know, downpouring rain and, you know, even, you know, guys having to sweep water off the track. I mean, I just don't remember ever seeing anything like that. But as far as, you know, when you kind of look at some of the standouts from yesterday's meet of the best in the area, I mean, Austin Edwards, Grand Legends Jr., I mean, he definitely was one of the standouts, especially on the boys' side, where he won three events. Won the long jump, he won the 100-yard dash, and then he anchored Grand Legends winning 4x100 relay team. So he was very strong, and, you know, especially a solid performance for him because he came off a little bit of an ankle injury to start the season from basketball. But he's done really well for Grand Legends. Has a chance to do well at the state meet on Saturday. So I look at him on the boys' side. And on the girls' side, you got to look at, you know, Rihanna Blair. She had a good day for East Lansing. She won the 400 and also was a part of two winning relays for them. So I think, and, you know, those were kind of the two individuals that immediately you know, stuck out to me from that meet.
I gotta love it. Again, folks, Brian Calloway of the Lansing State Journal. Again, go pick up the latest edition of the Lansing State Journal at your latest store or you know, down the street at the market or something like that. He does a great job. Again, he's got an article entitled Track Athletes Get Final Tune-Up at Honor Roll Meet, breaking down everything at yesterday's Greater Lansing Honor Roll Meet of Champions at Holt High School. Always a fantastic time having you on, Brian. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. Brian Calloway, got to love him. All right, folks. Well, again, we only got about 4 minutes left in the show here, Isaac. I wanted to get to this, man. I've been wanting to get to this story for, what, the past 2 days now?
Yeah.
Again, you know, things come up, and, of course, we had the breaking news concerning FIFA that we had to lead the show with because I think that is a very, very important topic that hits on a lot of different areas of importance that, you know, as our mantra says here on Current Sports, goes beyond the X's and O's. But a conversation that also goes beyond the X's and O's concerns the three-point line in the game of basketball. Now, you saw the last game that took place between the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets. James Harden went absolutely ballistic with 45 points to keep the Rockets alive and to force another chance at inching closer towards making this a series and pushing it to a game seven, possibly, which I don't think will happen. I think tonight's the last night for Houston. But I believe that that game, Isaac, that we saw over Memorial Day weekend had the most, well, I think the entire series has had the most three-point attempts in NBA playoff history. I mean, that's unbelievable. So a lot of people are looking at that series and saying, oh, and just the entire spectrum of the NBA basketball, of NBA basketball period, and saying, kids who watch the NBA today, will this have an effect on them in the way that they play the game? Will they, you know, start chucking up three-pointers left and right, and instead of focusing on the fundamentals like the mid-range jumper and taking it to the basket, does this hurt the game? Quick thoughts. We will definitely lead the show with this tomorrow, but quick thoughts as a prelude.
Al, I'm a three-point shooter on the basketball court, you know? I mean, it does produce a different type of play, and there's the NBA is divided into the pre-three-point era and the three-point era.
Right.
They really are tough to compare, so I don't think it's hurt the game. I actually like the game, but it does definitely dissuade young kids from learning important skills like left-handed dribbling. I curse myself for that every day.
Right, right. But yeah, I mean, and I tend to agree with you because it's interesting to go and watch an AAU basketball game. I actually myself play AAU, and there are many athletes out there that, you know, pro athletes out there to play the game of basketball and look at AAU basketball and the way it's played, you know, players out there just basically without a leash, a lot of three-pointers are taken, and they say, yeah, this hurts the game. We'll continue this conversation tomorrow. Again, does the three-point line hurt the overall product of basketball? We'll discuss that to start the show tomorrow. You have been listening to WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic hump day and be easy, people.